Ah, so most people might not know that female koalas actually have two internal vaginas, three, and males have a forked penis.
A forked penis? Why?
So sometimes it says they have two penises, but really it's a forked penis.
Oh, and so how is the whole, sexual process then different from other animals?
It's still similar. They still have to have sex and there's still a lot of contact, but their external organs look a little bit different from us. So most of it's internal, so they still have a cloaca. They still have to have sexual contact to fertilize, but internally it looks very different.
Right. And does it then function differently, for female koalas than birthing and all that?
Well, of course, because they deliver their young into their pouch.
Mm.
So there's obviously, differences in compared to a human, for example, how we classically think about it. Yes.
So starting off on this note, that immediately will tie into this idea of koalas and chlamydia. So that is a lot of what your research looks into. How do you even begin to approach this realm?
So it's obviously a sexually transmitted infection, but it also affects the ocular tissue, so the eye of the koalas. It's probably transmitted by contact as well and, by fecal-oral contamination. So if they eat leaves that another koala has pooed on, then maybe it's transmitted that way as well. So I guess we try not to think too much about the physics of the mechanism, but actually look at sick koalas externally so we can actually get access to where the chlamydia is affecting the koala externally from the eye and from the external genitals, the cloaca.
How common is chlamydia amongst koala populations?
Unfortunately, it's actually really high. So in some populations in southeast Queensland, we can see really high prevalence rates if we sample and screen in the wild. And this is work done by my collaborators. And it certainly seems to be that there's very few populations that are chlamydia free in Australia. It's really not a problem until the koalas get stressed. And then it's probably a low level of disease, but then it really becomes a severe problem when they're stressed.
How so?
So it seems that if the koala's already sick, they've been under a dog attack, there's nutritional deprivation, or there's a new highway being built through and they're under some kind of habitat stress, then we see lots and lots more koalas presenting with chlamydial illness in those areas. And so we see the wet bottom, the ocular damage, all the symptoms of really sick koalas.
And just to take a step back, what are some of the biggest ways that koalas, you mentioned a couple before, but what are some of the biggest ways that chlamydia affects a koala?
So it presents really severely. It's a really horrible disease. So there's a number of ways that it presents. So ocular tissue is scarred. So the eye is really, really scarred and gunky, and eventually they can be blind. And of course, that's then a life-threatening condition for a koala in the wild. They can't really survive if they're blind. And that looks a lot like trachoma in humans, which a different type of chlamydia causes in humans. And in the genital space, in the urogenital space, the infection can lead to sort of really severe cysts in the bladder, and that's what causes that wet bottom. So they get all cysty and they don't, so they lose the function of the bladder. And so they have this kind of urine stain that's really smelly and really unpleasant, and obviously the koala's in a lot of pain, and so that's where their fur looks all wet, literally wet bottom fur. But also what it does is it scars all throughout their reproductive tract, so their uterus, all of their kind of reproductive organs are all scarred and damaged, and so they lose fertility. So they're in a lot of pain, they're not able to do normal functions, they're not controlling their urine, but also they're losing their fertility. So it's really severe. The loss of fertility is really hard to see. There's special ultrasounds where we can see the cysts all through the uterus and the scarring.
Is it more common for female koalas to have chlamydia or male koalas, or is it kind of evenly spread?
It appears to be evenly spread from the studies we've done so far, and it probably has a similar damaging effect in the male reproductive tract as well. It's harder to see those organs, but yeah.
How is the human chlamydia disease different than from the koala chlamydia?
So you see lots of jokes about, the One Direction boys cuddling a koala and maybe they have chlamydia now, for example. I think we saw that in the media a few years ago. So it's a different type of chlamydia. So the strain or the species is a different chlamydia. But in fact, the way the disease presents is very similar, and probably the way that it transmits is also very similar. So we know that the genital chlamydia that humans get is sexually transmitted by that direct sexual contact, and the disease, the way it presents and the scarring in the tissue is very, very similar. The ocular chlamydia, which is a different type of chlamydia that humans get that causes blindness if we don't treat it, that also presents by sort of direct contact, you know, by a mum in a developing village. A mum might wipe the eyes of all of her kids to clean them with the same cloth, and then that transmits the chlamydia between those kids' eyes, or flies from latrines spreading around the village and landing on everyone's eyes and transmitting it. So the transmission mechanisms and the way the disease looks is very similar, but luckily they're two different types of chlamydia. So don't stop cuddling koalas, guys.
By nature, are koalas quite sexual?
So I don't study their behavior in the wild. I mainly work in the lab, but my understanding is that they are. The males are quite defendant. They actually roam quite a bit. So we imagine them as these animals that just live in one tree forever, but they actually have quite a large territory and they actually interact a lot, and they do have a structure in the way that their wildlife, that they live their lives. And yeah, they are. They do have sex. They have to have babies, so they have to have sex.
How about koala populations in captivity, if they're then catered for or looked after, but then also within the confines of perhaps being in a zoo? Is chlamydia still present for these koalas?
So most of those koalas are chlamydia-free. They're treated. Okay, so if they come in from the wild with disease, we can treat them at the moment to cure that disease. Or populations that are bred and maintained are generally chlamydia-free.
And so how do you then, what sort of treatments are available for more wild koalas or ones who have chlamydia?
So at the moment, there's one primarily main way that we treat it. It's a specially formulated drug that we use. It's an antibiotic, much like what we use on humans, but we have it formulated in a very special way that means we can inject the drug into the koala muscle. That has to be done every day for 45 days. So the koala comes in from the wild with the disease. The zoo and wildlife hospital manage that koala's disease. They manage the symptoms. They inject the drug daily for 45 days and look for clearance of the symptoms. And then the koala is re-released into its home habitat so long as it recovers. That drug is the only antibiotic that works. There's a lot of reasons for that. So the koala has a really special way of eating. As you know, they eat gum leaves. Now, to eat those gum leaves in their gut, they have really, really special family of microorganisms or ecology of microorganisms that help them to degrade those gum leaves. So that's why we can't orally give them antibiotics, because those antibiotics that we would take orally kill those organisms and then they can't eat and they're at danger of starving to death. And in fact, that does happen if we give them the wrong antibiotics orally. The drug that we use, that I mentioned, that we inject, is now running out of supply. There's only one company that makes it, and they're under a lot of pressure in terms of their manufacture sites, and so the supply is limited and tenuous and may in fact stop within a number of years. So one of the key issues facing the koala, along with habitat destruction and wild dogs, is chlamydia and how do we treat it if they come in with the disease, and that's going to be a real threat in the coming future years.
So if they continue, or if they discontinue this treatment for these koalas, or if it's getting lower and lower in terms of its supply, what other alternatives are there, or how else could you then devise a medicine so it would work for the koalas and then wouldn't not work when they ingest it?
So that's exactly the work that we're trying to do. So we urgently need to develop a new medicine, and we're working on an injectable form of a drug that's specific to chlamydia. And so the drug that we're working on doesn't kill other organisms that we've tested so far, and it will still be injected, so it still won't go through the gut, but also it doesn't appear to kill a whole range of organisms. It seems to be chlamydia specific. So that kind of strategy, a chlamydia specific therapy, preferably one that we don't have to do for every 45 days, is what we're working on.
And I read an article while I was searching for this story, and the headline was why we should be culling our koalas with chlamydia. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, so that particular article was on the back of a really interesting research study that suggests, and it comes back to your questions about sexual transmission. So the premise of that particular study was, if you have a male koala, for example, who has chlamydia and he's transmitting it to a lot of women in his women, a lot of female koalas in his environment, then maybe the best thing is actually to cull him and stop that transmission, for example. So that was really based on mathematical modelling of how the disease spreads really quickly and easily in those stressed or just local habitats and environments of groups of koalas. And in some ways, that is an extreme and really distressing mechanism, but it would stop the rest of the koalas getting chlamydia and potentially dying or losing their fertility. So it's a numbers game, and it's if you look at it just as numbers and not as these beautiful creatures, then you could see how you could come up with that conclusion. But of course, it's not acceptable to most of us to think that we would kill any koala because they have chlamydia. But the other thing to note is that sometimes they're so diseased that they're euthanized. So already that's the case. But certainly that article was based on reducing the transmission by taking out those highly infected animals that might be spreading it through a lot of the habitat. Personally, I'm not going to advocate for that solution. It might mathematically work, but it's too confronting to think about doing that. I think let's advocate for treatment. And ultimately, another group is working on a vaccine, and of course, ideally a vaccine that we can administer in the future. Maybe some time off, but that's another solution. But we're always going to need to treat because we're not going to vaccinate every wild koala very easily.
And also think of solutions in terms of de-stressing environments for koalas.
Absolutely. Habitat protection, less wild dogs out there in the environment that are attacking them. If we're going to build roads through the middle of a habitat, we need to have safe passages for them. We need to really innovate what we're doing and think about our everyday impact on the environment, each of us individually, as well as policy and government level decisions. Yeah.
Why are you in this line of work? Why are you passionate about koalas?
That's a really interesting question. So I actually work on human chlamydia as well. And this is one of those funny things that happened in research where we had a program of research on humans. We had this particular compound that we were testing on human isolates. And at the same time, our colleagues in the koala chlamydia field were telling us about this distressing shortage of this drug and the real threat and the need for a new antibiotic. And so we thought, well, actually, there's a more urgent need for new drugs for koala chlamydia than there is for human chlamydia. We have good drugs for human chlamydia right now. And so we said, let's give it a go. And so it was kind of one of those sidesteps that you do that has led into this amazing, really important research opportunity and project for the koalas.